The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We got a lot to get to on today's program. We're going to try to squeeze in 26 minutes of broadcasting from our TV program. We'll use the program that's going to be coming out this weekend, hopefully for our Bible study later on. And also, I thought I'd mention in all of the comments yesterday about the anniversary of the last hour, or 2 days ago, I guess it would be. Yeah, today's May 7th already. So we're 2 days on, but I don't think I mentioned anything about it being the five-year anniversary of KPCG. We drew attention to the last hour book. We drew attention to what my father said back in 2001. But who can forget, except me, that in 2015, May 5th, 2015, that's when we started with our first program, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, and if my memory serves me right, I think it was the first programming period that we had for the radio station. So hard to believe that the radio station there in North Edmond, it's been going strong, and of course, it's been streamed right around the world for 5 years. Sam gave me this quote yesterday from the Saving America article. This is from a couple years ago. And my father said this: God has blessed America like no other nation, and the devil wants to destroy America like no other nation. He wants to destroy America and Britain too. It says, as I prove in my free booklet, America Under Attack, Satan is marshaling every tool and weapon that he can to wreck this nation. And he's having alarming success. My father's written more recently, or talked more recently, about him wanting to, Satan that is, wanting to blot out the nations of Israel. He just wants to wipe them out entirely. And so it's important that we're reminded of this from time to time as we look at the events of today. Through this lens, what is Satan's objective? We get in there and we're trying to point out and expose some of the motivations of human beings, but we have to certainly see the spirit behind this, the spirit behind what's happening in the world today, in the United States, in the UK. My father said this evil spiritual power is influencing the radical left. Most Republicans don't realize what they are dealing with. It says people who are absolutely committed to destroying the government of this land. They're absolutely committed to destroying the government of this land. President Trump yesterday, he commented on what he's going up against and how that he can, there's really nothing he can do to satisfy the media or the Democrats. I think in the midst of, or at the early stages of this pandemic, I think even he thought that surely we'll all come together to some degree, but he now sees that even this will not bring Americans together. This will not unite Republicans and Democrats. This will not win over what has been a hostile press from the beginning. Here's what he said yesterday. Move ahead to clip five.
Look, here's the story. There's nothing I can do to satisfy the media, the Democrats, or the fake news. And I understand that. We did the greatest job mobilization in history with the ventilators. And I don't think there was a story what a great job we did. Now, there's not a thing I can do to satisfy the fake news, and there's not a thing I can do to satisfy Democrats. I watch this phony Chuck Schumer. Everyone in New York knows he's a total phony. He brought nothing back to New York except salt. You know what salt is? Bad tax policy. He brought salt back. He didn't even fight it. I watched him the other night on a show, and all he could talk about was testing, testing, testing. And yet I showed a chart yesterday where our testing is far superior to anybody else's testing. They're very smart, but they're very devious people, and in many cases, very bad people.
And recently, he's called them scum, even. Devious, bad, evil people. Again, my father said, most Republicans don't realize what they're dealing with. People who are absolutely committed to destroying the government of this land, they're committed to it. And we told you at the early stages of this crisis how that the radical left, they were going to exploit this. And we're preparing for some shows next week to just show that. You're seeing these climate change zealots, they're popping up all over the place talking about how good this is, this lockdown. It's great. The earth is, it's being healed. We're healing the earth, they're saying. We need to do this more often. Richard sent me a tweet, I think it was a tweet, this morning. Someone saying that, you know, we need to, basically he implied we need to do this every year. Shut everything down. Heal the planet. It's helping us. It's helping to save the planet. Here it's destroying so many lives and the livelihoods of so many. And they can't see that. They're blinded by their religion. Big pharma. Big government. Big Hollywood. Big media. Big university. Just go along. Don't, if you protest it, then you're dangerous. You're the radical. Early on in the crisis, what did they say? Well, we've got to do this. We just have to, because otherwise the hospitals are going to be overwhelmed. We've got to flatten the curve so that we save the hospitals. Now they've changed it to, because the curve's already flattened and hospitals are so wide open. They have so many empty beds that some of them are going out of business. So now it's no longer flattening the curve to save the hospitals. Now we've got to flatten the curve to save every single life. Every single life, I should say, from COVID-19. Never mind the other lives that are destroyed. Never mind the other sicknesses and diseases that this lockdown causes. It's only COVID-19. It's only coronavirus. It's only the Wuhan flu. And so we've got to keep this lockdown in place for as long as possible. Now, this is what the radical left says. Of course, there's more and more people that are waking up to the fact that we've got to pull out of this. And they're finding just how difficult it is to come out of the lockdown. It was so easy to go in, but now it's quite the challenge to come out of it. Yesterday, the president, and this was, I think, a journalist that really isn't so very hostile to him, but even this journalist asked him a question about, well, if you come out of this lockdown too soon, aren't you risking American lives? And here's how the president responded, clip 4.
You have to be warriors. We can't keep our country closed down for years. And we have to do something, but we have to get our country open again. And you see it. Look, you cover it. People want to go back. You're going to have a problem if you don't do it.
You're going to have a problem if you don't do it. You're going to have more problems because of this so-called cure. But if I was him, I wouldn't even accept the premise of the question. Well, by coming out of this lockdown a little bit early or earlier, or phasing it in. That's all that the states are doing. They're just basically putting their tippy toes into the pool. That's it. They're hardly jumping in. They're just testing the waters a little bit, easing in. And there are the reporters on the attack. So then you must be prepared to sacrifice lives to reopen the economy. You're putting the economy ahead of human lives. That's the narrative. And as I say, I wouldn't even accept that premise, because the truth of it is what he said there toward the end of that clip. You're going to have lots and lots of problems if you don't. If you don't unlock things. Here in the UK, they're trying to figure out a way out now. They're looking for ways to encourage people, soon anyway, to get back to work. Katie Hopkins at Front Page, she said a quarter of the... You talk about lacking incentive to do just that, and we've mentioned on this show the polling that shows most people in Britain are quite happy to stay where they are, and Katie Hopkins, of course, reveals why. She says a quarter of the British workforce is sitting at home in its pajamas, receiving 80% of its pay, up to a maximum of £2,500 a month, guaranteed by the government until the end of June. We're just in the early part of May. This is a government guarantee for the next 6, 7, 8 weeks. She says a similar scheme has been put in place for the self-employed. The Prime Minister's official spokesman said, since the launch, 800,000 employers have used the job retention scheme to furlough 6.3 million jobs. Now, the United States has a similar scheme. The PPE, Payment Protection Plan. It says, since the launch, 800,000 employers have used the job retention scheme to furlough 6.3 million jobs. The Office for Budgetary Responsibility estimated that the scheme would cost the Treasury a total of £39 billion. This, she says, incredibly overgenerous scheme by the British government was grasped at hungrily by big business, eager to retain labor without any of the costs. They love it. Well, we can hold on to our employees and we don't have to pay them. She says even small and medium-sized business owners, usually reluctant to turn to the state for support with resilience built into their models, caved into the scheme. It was simply too generous to refuse. The state now holds their employees in its warm embrace, just as with all the rest. All these studies, as I say, everyone works for the government. It's just crazy fiscal policy. And yet, just heartily embraced by all these nations worldwide. United States, Great Britain, it was just too generous to refuse. It says, as for the employees, most have been delighted, and with good reason, in their minds, government money is free money. The invisible golden goose in the sky is laying golden eggs to pay for them to staycation with their family. They've got a nice, long 6, 7 week staycation. They can stay at home. And those who venture out, well, the police have been turned loose to intimidate them into getting back inside. Now that's beginning to change. Now the government's getting worried. Now they're talking about when we can all go back to work, because they don't want to crash the economy. So what are they going to do? Turn the police loose to start kicking people out of their homes to get back outside, to go back to work? It's just a total disaster. And so much of it, as I keep saying, self-inflicted. She says, prohibited from working under the furlough scheme, the need to do any work at all or feel any kind of guilt about taking money for doing nothing, has been completely absent from these sedentary fools. They fail to see that what they're actually gobbling up along with their takeaways and Netflix box sets is almost as much cash as it costs to fund our NHS on a monthly basis. Just out of the blue. The NHS, that's the costliest, that is the costliest program for the entire government here in the UK. And overnight, they added, effectively, they added another NHS to the budget. With all of these bailouts, with all of these government programs. And now you have some of the administrators in Boris Johnson's government panicking. This one here from the Times. Rishi Sunak is preparing to, he's the economic, I forget the title exactly, but he runs the economy under Boris Johnson. He's preparing to wean businesses and workers off the government's furloughing scheme by cutting wage subsidies amid concerns that the nation has become addicted. So he knows it's breaking the bank in London. And then he sees, too, that the citizens in Britain, they're addicted to these schemes. It's free money. It's like it's falling out of the sky. Why hurry back to work? This is awesome. This is what we've been dreaming of. It says the chancellor will announce plans next week to wind down the scheme from July as part of an attempt to get people back to work as the lockdown is eased. So Boris Johnson's got a big speech on Sunday, and evidently the restrictions are going to be eased even as early as Monday next week. This from The Telegraph. It says lockdown measures could start being eased Monday. Further on, it writes, the prime minister will... Well, it says Boris Johnson has said with the government's stay-at-home slogan is expected to be dropped. So that's quietly happening right now. Anywhere you go around the country right now, you see these signs. Stay at home, save lives, save the NHS. And they're already in the process of removing this. And this was announced last night. Richard, by the way, he had some speculation. His conspiracy theories were running wild yesterday. The big revelation the other night, Neil Ferguson and the extramarital affair he's having with this woman, putting her and her family in danger. He's COVID-19 positive. He couldn't even quarantine himself for more than 11 days. He most likely got Prime Minister Johnson sick. And it's his model. It's his model. You can thank that model for the lockdown here and in the United States. But you have this big expose, this investigative report that hits the news May 5th. Tuesday night, and then the very next day, you've got these other reports here in the UK about, well, we've got to ease some of these restrictions. We've got a speech coming up. Let's get rid of the slogan and so on. And then, of course, the economic minister saying that people are addicted to this. We're running out of money. And as Richard was saying, that these stories would come out around the same time suggest that they're doing something to try to change the public perception, to try to change public opinion, because they're addicted to the handouts. They're reluctant to go back to work. They're scared. They're getting handouts, so they're taken care of. So there's no reason to look at this logically. There's no reason to hurry on back to work. I think the thing that is interesting, whether or not Richard thinks the Telegraph is fed up with this. You read the Telegraph. The Telegraph's a pretty good publication. They want to get back to work. They want Britain to return to normal. And of course, they're the ones who exposed Neil Ferguson for the fraud that he is. He's not even abiding by his own standards. And the rest of the world grinds to a halt because of him. Well, you look at this story and the timing of it. What's interesting to me, in that piece, I read it to you yesterday, his first rendezvous with this woman, the one that they noted in the article, March 30th, just 11 days after he tests positive for coronavirus. Then there's another rendezvous, a sexual escapade on April the 8th. And then, of course, the story hits on May the 5th. So if they knew... And even within the article, it says it, basically this woman, she says it was an open secret. I mean, it's no secret that we have an open marriage. And according to her, her friends and such, they knew she was having a relationship, a sexual relationship with Neil Ferguson. So how common the knowledge was, I guess we don't know for sure. But what we do know from the dates within the article is that the Telegraph knew about it back on March 30th. Here are some investigative reporters evidently trailing Neil Ferguson, watching his house, perhaps. You know, I think there's three people on the byline for that article, which in itself was refreshing. At least they got to some information that is pretty important, I'd say. Usually when you see the team of reporters, they're there to expose the truth about a tweet from President Trump. But you do wonder, what was going on in late March, early April, and why the story, why it took so long before it finally hit. Richard suggests that early on in the crisis, you see, the government was all in with the lockdown. And I think to some degree the Telegraph was. But they're beginning to change now. And it certainly does help their cause if you can come out with an article that says Neil Ferguson is a fraud and a hypocrite. And oh, by the way, he's gotten all these things wrong in his career. It's really the same in the United States. Everybody was on board with it initially. And now more and more you have people waking up. President Trump. And then, of course, it's just the red states in the U.S., right? Now, you see, it's just strictly along political lines. The radical left, they want it. They want the lockdown there forever. It's saving the planet. And then you have others wanting to break out of it. Here in the U.K., they're trying to figure out how to get people off of the addiction. And the U.S. is not that far behind. But at least you look at some of the red states in the U.S. and there's people itching to get out. There's this woman in Texas sent to jail 7 days, fined for $7,000 because she opened her salon. And here the judge makes his big pronouncement, how she broke the law. And her respectful response to that judge was, look, I'm trying to provide for my family, I'm trying to feed my children. You can see the dividing line. House divided. Well, coming back to this catastrophic mistake, this model that prompted the Boris Johnson government and the President Trump administration to go all in on lockdown back in mid-March, mid to late March. Toby Young writes at the Telegraph, Neil Ferguson isn't single-handedly responsible for the world historical blunder, but he does bear some responsibility. His apocalyptic predictions frightened the British government into imposing a full lockdown, with other governments quickly following suit. And I'm afraid he's absolutely typical of the breed. He suffers from the same fundamental arrogance that progressive interventionists have exhibited since at least the middle of the 18th century, wildly overestimating the good that governments can do, assuming there are no limits to what science can achieve, and at the same time ignoring the empirical evidence that their ambitious public programs are a complete disaster. It's been a complete disaster, and they completely ignore that evidence. It was finally revealed yesterday, by the way, how he factored or figured the statistics from his model. That was like top secret. And according to one Google software engineer, he worked at Google, I think, for years, his take on Neil Ferguson's model, he said, all papers based on this code should be retracted immediately. Imperial's modeling efforts should be reset with a new team that isn't under Professor Ferguson and which has a commitment to replicable results with published code from day one. In other words, it's garbage. He put garbage into it, and what came out in the form of that model? Garbage! Lies! Deception! And every major nation in the world just swallowed it completely. There's a story yesterday, by the way, I think it was in some U.S. media, should have been in more, but it's covered here in the Daily Mail, having to do with New York, as they are finding out, according to a very recent study, that 66% of the new infections in New York City, they're coming from people that were locked down. You would think it's the essential workers, the ones that have to get out, the nurses and so on, that have to work during this pandemic. Well, it turns out that the vast majority of those still getting sick, they're hunkered down. They're locked in houses. And it's still spreading. This is what Andrew Cuomo had to say yesterday at his press conference, clip one.
But if you notice, 18% of the people came from nursing homes. Less than 1% came from jail or prison. 2% came from the homeless population. 2% from other congregate facilities. But 66% of the people were at home, which is shocking to us.
They're shocked by this. 66% were at home under lockdown, and they're still getting sick. What is going on? The lockdown was supposed, at the very least, the lockdown was supposed to lock down the virus, right? It turns out that for all of its faults, the lockdown's not even locking out the virus. Still spreading, and he's shocked, the governor of New York. He went on to say this, clip two.
We thought maybe they were taking public transportation, and we've taken special precautions on public transportation, but actually no, because these people were literally at home. 2% took car services, 9% were driving their own vehicle. Only 4% were taking public transportation, 2% were walking. 84% were at home, literally. Were they working? No. They were retired or they were unemployed. Only 17% working. So that says they're not working, they're not traveling, they're predominantly downstate, predominantly minority, predominantly older, predominantly non-essential employees.
So there he is trying to wrap his mind around these figures. And then how do you suppose he concludes his thoughts? He basically concludes by saying, look, we've done everything that we can to lock you down. And so you're obviously not doing your part. You're not wearing the mask. You're not washing your hands. In truth, the lockdown, it's not working. The evidence is piling high. The data is coming in. It's destroying so many sectors of society, the economy, first and foremost. But here we're past the peak, and we're finding that the lockdown's not even working to slow the spread of the disease. It's still spreading. I have another story here that talks about how that it's probably been around for longer than we even have said or have realized, the virus, that is. And yet they're still going to find some way to take credit for what they've done. What they've done is they've made it worse in so many different ways. When we come back, we're going to conclude today's program with a preview of this weekend's TV program for here in the UK, a program titled A Light to the World. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to submit feedback to the program, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. In 2 Corinthians 4, God reveals that Satan is the god of this world, and that he has blinded the minds of them which believe not. Did you know that most in this world today are walking in spiritual darkness? Jesus Christ, however, said that he is the light of this world, and that those who follow him do not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. Are you walking in the light?
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the program. In recent weeks, many of us have probably learned a lot more than we care to know about sickness and disease and viruses. But one of the things I've tried to emphasize on my radio program is just the basic laws of radiant health, just the importance of eating right and getting occasional exercise, refreshing rest and sleep, and of course getting outside and drawing on the benefits that come from fresh air and sunlight. There was an expert in President Trump's administration that talked about how that the coronavirus, it dies fastest when it's hit by direct sunlight. And that made me think of this quote I used years ago in a lecture from 15 Million Degrees. It's a book about the sun. It says, not only does sunlight allow us to see, but it made our rocky planet habitable for millions of species of animals and plants. It grows our food, it drives our weather, and it can even be utilized to generate electricity to power modern society. It says, sunlight is amazingly versatile, but above all, there is something about sunlight that means it is able to keep us alive. We literally could not live without it. It's essential for our day-to-day living. We couldn't live without it, as that book brings out. Now, I mentioned seven laws of radiant health. That's something that our church has talked about over the years. This is from the booklet that goes by that name. It says, exposing a good portion of the body to the sun's rays is beneficial. This just talks about the health benefits to getting outdoors and breathing deeply fresh air, and of course the sun rays as well. It says, the sun's rays that provide the greatest benefit to health are the ultraviolet rays. These rays aid in the utilization of phosphorus and calcium, and vitamin D is formed primarily through this influence. It says, try to spend time out of doors in the open air and sunshine. So that's just a common sense point, that we benefit physically and even mentally from just getting outdoors. It shows the power of fresh air and sunshine. It's something that we just, I think, instinctively know. You're drawn to it here in the UK. If you've had a few days of overcast weather and then the sun comes out, oftentimes you see a lot of people take to the streets, go on their walks, walk their animals or whatever they might do, but they're drawn to that sunlight. Let's begin our study today over in 2 Corinthians and in chapter 4. What I want to do today is to just tie in a spiritual lesson, because as you study through the Bible from cover to cover, you see a lot in there about the sun and about light spiritually. If these are some of the benefits that we receive from sunlight physically, what about spiritual light? Now, this book that we study on this program, the Holy Bible, God's inspired word, it talks about this present world that we're living in. It says it's a present evil world in Galatians 1 and verse 4. Several verses, as we'll see even here today with the ones that we read, speak of a world in darkness. A world in darkness. There's some amazing statements, by the way, in this first lesson of our Bible correspondence course. 36 lessons, and you can enroll in this course today. But it just talks about the world today as we know it, as we see it. This is a quote, by the way, from that lesson. The whole world is now in a time of grave crisis and is rapidly approaching a condition of total chaos. We are now in the crisis period at the close of this age. The world does not really know where it's headed, nor does it comprehend the lessons of the past. And isn't that true? This was written years ago for this correspondence lesson. But look at how applicable this instruction is for today. We're living in a world where we really don't know where we're headed. We're coming up to all of these events, unprecedented actions and events day in and day out. It's a world without direction. And there's a reason for that. Here in 2 Corinthians 4, in verse 4, it says, "In whom the God of this world has blinded the minds of them which believe not, lest the light of the glorious gospel of Christ, who is the image of God, should shine unto them." Here the gospel is likened to a bright light. And God says that the minds of men have been blinded to the light of this glorious gospel. Blinded by the God of this world. That's Satan the devil. He was Lucifer at the beginning of his creation. And that name, it means light bringer. He was to bring light to this earth. But he rebelled against God. He turned to lawlessness. He wanted to put himself even ahead of God. He wanted to put himself first. Vanity. He was motivated by vanity, not by obeying God's laws. So he's the God of this world. Your Bible says that he's blinded the minds of men. Revelation 12, of course, says that he's deceived the whole world, even the world of religion. But staying here in 2 Corinthians, continuing in verse 6, it says, "For God, who commanded the light to shine out of darkness, has shined in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ." So here the Apostle Paul compares spiritual light to what God sent in Genesis 1 when he said, "Let there be light." Of course, there he was talking in the physical sense. And then on day 4, he separated the light from darkness. And here it talks about spiritual light. Spiritual light, the darkness that prevailed before the Spirit of God moved upon the surface of this earth. What a comparison. When God gets involved, when God recreated the earth, then there was light. And when God comes into your life, your life will light up. The Gospels even speak of that. I don't have time to cover all the scriptures that are coming to mind, but notice over here in John, the Gospel of John, we'll go to chapter 1. John 1 and verse 3, it says, "All things were made by him." That's speaking of the one who became Jesus Christ. "And without him was not anything made that was made. In him," speaking of Christ, "in him was life, and the life was the light of men." The light of men. This is in one of Herbert Armstrong's old booklets. He said, "Is it mere coincidence that as the sun brought the light of day from the darkness of night on the fourth day of creation week, Christ brought the light of truth out of the darkness of evil after 4,000 years. In him was light, yet most still loved darkness." We'll see that in a moment in chapter 3 of John. But here is Mr. Armstrong talking about light, the light of God's truth, coming to this world. But men mostly rejected it. Verse 4, or verse 5, it says, "And the light shines in darkness, and the darkness comprehends it not," or the darkness doesn't overtake it. This light that's shining, that's the meaning there of comprehend. Let me just quote to you from my father's book, The God Family Vision. It says here, "Lucifer, who was the light bringer to this world, turned to darkness. He then used all his powers and energies to bring this world into darkness. I told you a little bit about that history in just a moment ago. But it says his dark influences have prevailed throughout human history. Christ, the light, came right into the midst of it. The darkness did not overtake Jesus Christ's light. So the light came right into the midst of this thick darkness, and the darkness could not overtake Jesus Christ. Verse 6, it continues here. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. So this refers to John the Baptist. It says, the same came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but he was sent to bear witness to that light. Here the light, speaking of Christ, is capitalized. The light of the world. And John the Baptist came to declare him, or to proclaim that light, to witness, as it says there. Verse 9 continues, that was the true light, which lights every hope, which lights every man that cometh into the world. That was the true light that lights every man that comes into the world. That's how far-reaching this vision is. My father writes in the God Family Vision, every single person who has ever lived will sooner or later have to be lighted by this light, or he has no future. He'll go into darkness forever. There's no other hope, no other way to live, no other light. There's only one light. There will not be any other for all eternity. This is our hope. This is our calling. This is a light that's for every person born into this world. That's coming when God sends his son back to this earth and establishes the government of God on earth, God's kingdom on earth. Then that light is going to shine forth from all of mankind. Now today, you look at this world today, and it's not like that at all. And John 3, if we continue our study here, explains why. John 3 and verse 19, it says, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. You see, that's the great condemnation. When you look at this world today, here the Son of God, he came in the flesh as Jesus Christ just 2,000 years ago. He came as the light, capital L, the light in a very dark, dark world. But as your Bible says there, men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. See, it always gets back to sin, doesn't it? Lawlessness. Following in the steps of Satan the devil, Lucifer, who turned against God in rebellion and sin. And mankind has been following in that same course. Now that's why we're living in a world where it seems there's no direction. We don't know where we're headed. That's why we're living in a world with so much chaos and disorder. And we've certainly seen that in recent months. Verse 19, well, I read that. Look at verse 20. It says, for everyone that doeth evil hates the light, neither comes to the light, lest his deeds be reproved. But he that doeth truth, it says, comes to the light, and his deeds, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God. So if you're obeying God, then you're just drawn to the light. You're drawn to God and his presence. You're drawn to Jesus Christ and his example. You're drawn to faithful ministers. If you're living in darkness, well, you don't want to have anything to do with that. You want to do your own thing. You want God to stay out of your business. That's what the majority, that's the course that this world is on. And that's why there's so much darkness in this world, spiritually speaking. But in your individual life, God can intervene. He can open your mind, and he can fill your life, your mind, with spiritual light. And think of the health benefits to that, spiritually speaking, to live a life with purpose, to live a life with direction, to know where you're headed, to know that there is hope for this dying world, There is hope for this world enveloped in darkness. And that hope is in the good news of the glorious gospel that Jesus proclaimed when he walked this earth 2,000 years ago. That's the good news of the soon coming kingdom of God on earth. You can study a lot more on that subject in these two books that we'll offer to you here today. This first one, John's Gospel, The Love of God. I've gone through a few scriptures here from John's Gospel, and this really takes you into an in-depth study of that gospel that John wrote. And then this one, we'll come to a few verses in Peter, 1st and 2nd Peter, in the next segment. But right now, call our operators today and request the Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope. We'll be right back. Let's go ahead and continue our study here in the Gospel of John, this time in John chapter 12. Notice verse 35. Jesus said unto them, "Yet a little while is the light with you." He's speaking of himself. He says, "Walk while you have the light, lest darkness come upon you. For he that walks in darkness knows not where he goes." We all understand this. This is very simple to visualize. If you're walking in darkness, you don't know where you're going. You're going a lot slower, or you're very tentative. You're trying to feel your way around. That's what this world's doing. There's no spiritual light. And that's why every man just seems to be doing what seems right in his own eyes. And that's very dangerous. Read Proverbs 14 and verse 12. We're living in the age of Judges 21 and verse 25. We're all just doing what seems right. That's a dangerous course to be on. We have no spiritual light to guide us. In the Psalms, it talks about the Bible being a lamp unto our feet. It helps us to see where we're going. If we don't have that, we're in blindness. We're in darkness. That's what Jesus is talking about here. Verse 36, it says, "While you have light, believe in the light, that you may be the children of light." You've got to believe. You've got to be a doer. Jesus, he said elsewhere, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, but you don't do the things I say?" Continuing, it says, "These things spoke Jesus and departed and did hide himself from them." So he gives them this little lesson about light. Look, you're in the presence of light. And you want to make sure that you believe. And yet look at what the very next verse says, verse 37. "But though he had done so many miracles before them, yet they believed not on him." Well, they just saw all these miracles. What a witness. They were in the presence of the Son of God. He was right there in their midst. And yet they didn't believe. They didn't believe. They didn't follow in his steps. They preferred to live in darkness because their deeds, like John 3 says, their deeds were evil. It's the same with the world today. Let's look at 1 Thessalonians 5 and again see what the Apostle Paul wrote on the subject of light. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and in verse 4. It says here, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, you people of God, true Christians, you're not in darkness, that day should overtake you as a thief. You're not going to be caught unawares. You're not going to be surprised by the return of Jesus Christ. You'll be ready because you believe, because that light of the glorious gospel, it lights up your life. It fills your life." He continues, verse 5, "You are all the children of light and the children of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. We're the children of light." He's just carrying on with what Jesus said in John 12. True Christians, the children of the light. Verse 6, it says, "Therefore, let us not sleep as do others, but let us watch and be sober." And verses 7 and 8 continue, "For they that sleep, sleep in the night, and they that be drunken are drunken in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for an helmet the hope of salvation." Let us put on this armor. You can read a lot more about that in Ephesians 6. But we're children of the light. We're children of the day. We live in the light of the glorious gospel of Christ. The good news of the coming kingdom of God. That kingdom vision, it fills our lives today. Those of us that have been called out of this world, called out of darkness, called out of spiritual Egypt, on our way to the promised land. Let's look at the Gospel of Matthew, Matthew chapter 5. These are familiar verses here if you are familiar with some of the statements and the admonitions of Jesus Christ. Matthew 5 and verse 14, he begins by saying, you disciples are the light of the world. Now we've got to make sure that the darkness, it's so thick, that the darkness of this world does not overtake us. If you look at what happened to the worldwide church of God, this history is talked about in Raising the Ruins and Malachi's message to God's church today, but following the death of Herbert Armstrong, look at the thick darkness that set in that church. That church that turned to lawlessness and rebellion, and the lights went out, so to speak. Jesus said, you disciples, you're the light of the world. Here are the verses together. Verse 14 begins, you are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it gives light unto all that are in the house. It says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. You see, set an example in this dark and dying world. Let the light shine. Now that takes some energy coming from God. Just like it takes energy in the form of electricity to light up the lights in this studio. We have to plug into God. Let this mind be in you. Philippians 2:5. We've got to go to God in prayer and Bible study. We offered the prayer booklet on the last program. That's our lifeline. That's how we fill up our lives with God, praying to God, crying out to God, and then studying His inspired Word. This is what it says in the God Family Vision. Just as it takes energy and power to make an electrical light shine, it takes spiritual energy, the power of God, and real effort to make this spiritual light shine in your life. It takes real effort, spiritual effort, for that light to shine in your life. It takes prayer and Bible study. It takes contact with God. Let's go to the epistle of 2 Peter, 2 Peter chapter 1. And we'll just hit a couple more scriptures before we conclude here. A wonderful study. If you want to dig into it further, there's lots and lots of material, lots and lots of verses in the Bible that talk about spiritual light and the health benefits, as I touched on at the top of the program, with the physical. It's just obvious. It's common sense. The benefits that are there. If you just really surround yourself in the warmth and the energy coming from the sun, coming from the light of day. There's obviously balance and moderation. You can't have too much of it, but the health benefits, they're quite obvious. This is 2 Peter 1 and verse 19. It says, we have also a more sure word of prophecy, whereunto you do well that you take heed as unto a light that shines in a dark place until the day dawn and the day star arise in your hearts. This is talking about leading a life that culminates in the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. That's when He's going to bring light to all of mankind. Like it says in John 1 and verse 9, every human being basking in that light, that glory. Over in 1 Peter, just a few pages back, notice what it says here, 1 Peter 2 and verse 9, it says, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood and holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should show forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness. So God has called the true Christians today, the true disciples. He's called us out of the world, out of darkness, into His marvelous light, it says there. Notice what Herbert Armstrong had to say. This is from 1969. God's not the author of ugliness, but of beauty. not of unsightliness or drab, colorless, depressing surroundings, but of magnificence, inspiration, culture. Not the source or giver of cheapness, inferiority, but of quality and character. And he says, not of darkness, but of light and brilliance. That's what God is the author of. All that is beautiful and lovely and holy and pure, all that's lit up in brilliant light, spiritually speaking, he has a lot of light that he wants to bring into your life, if you'll let him, if you'll do your part to really go to that source, that energy source in heaven. This will certainly help you in your studies. The Epistles of Peter, A Living Hope, a booklet my father wrote, and then this one too, John's Gospel, The Love of God. Don't forget to enroll in our Bible study correspondence course if you haven't done that already. And of course, our Trumpet magazine is offered freely to subscribers all over the world. If you'd like to subscribe, just contact our operators today and ask for the free material. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you next time.